This week on Vaticano, Pope Leo XIV meets with the Roman Curia to officially start his ministry as Bishop of Rome. We go behind the scenes of a book launch that sheds light on the missionary journey of the new Pope, and pilgrims of the Papal Foundation journey through Rome during the Jubilee of Hope. Vaticano starts now. Pope Leo XIV took a key next step in his papal ministry this past weekend by taking possession of the papal basilicas, especially his cathedral, St. John Lateran. However, a day prior to this liturgical moment, the Holy Father chose to meet with the Roman Curia, the different offices or dicasteries that will assist him in governing the Church. On Saturday, May the 24th, nearly 5,000 Vatican employees gathered in the Paul VI Audience Hall for a first meeting with the new Bishop of Rome.
Cari fratelli e sorelle.
Reflecting on his path from the Peruvian city of Chiclayo to the Roman Curia, Pope Leo spoke candidly.
Io sono arrivato solo due anni fa.
I arrived only 2 years ago, when the beloved Pope Francis appointed me prefect of the dicastery for bishops. So I left the Diocese of Chiclayo, Peru, and came to work here. What a change. And now then, what can I say? Only what Simon Peter said to Jesus on Lake Tiberias. Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Popes pass. The Curia remains.
In his address, the Pope placed particular emphasis on the central role of the Curia as the guardian of the Church's historical memory. At a time marked by the transition between pontificates, he recalled that it is through this very structure that the Church's pastoral work and tradition remain coherent and enduring. On Sunday, Pope Leo XIV made his first appearance from the window of the Apostolic Palace, the first such moment since Pope Francis's last on February the 2nd, 2025. Pope Leo led the Regina Caeli prayer before thousands in St. Peter's Square, marking a significant gesture at the start of his pontificate. Later that day, he met with Rome's mayor, reaffirming his closeness to the city during the Jubilee of Hope.
On a special note, today I can say that for you and with you, I am Roman.
Finally, in a moment steeped in church tradition, Pope Leo entered the Archbasilica of St. John Lateran. Celebrated Mass to officially take possession of his cathedra as the Bishop of Rome.
I can assure you that I love you, and that I only wish to enter into your service and make available to everyone my poor strength, the little that I have, and that I am.
The Church has a future. This was the main message of Cardinals Kurt Koch and Rainer Maria Welki, who spoke at a conference of theologians in Rome on May the 23rd, 2025. At the symposium entitled The Future of the Church, Change or Transform, the two cardinals were joined by professor and priest Father Rolf Weimann and Father Guido Rodheut as presenters.
Weil der Glaube mehr als eine Meinung.
Faith is more than an opinion, and the Church is more than an association in which committees vote and decide. Faith can save souls, and the church can be an instrument of salvation.
Led by Professor Weimann, the symposium is organized by the Societas Theologiae Ecclesiastiche, which belongs to the German association Fundatio Christiana Virtus. In his speech, Father Weimann emphasized that if the church rediscovers its supernatural dimension, it will once again become clear that faith is the path to God.
Zu diesen Worten fügt Kardinal Ratzinger einen Lösungsvorschlag.
Joseph Ratzinger once proposed a solution. We do not need a more human church, but a more divine one. For a more divine one comes from God and guides us.
Und sie erfüllt uns und führt uns.
After the German priest, Father Guido Rodheut, spoke about Christocentric pastoral care, Cardinal Kurt Koch emphasized the role of the priest of the future.
Der heilige Augustinus erblickt deshalb den Prototyp des priesterlichen Dienstes.
St. Augustine sees the prototype of the priestly ministry in John the Baptist. Augustine underlined that in the New Testament, John the Baptist is referred to as the voice, while Jesus Christ is called the Word. With the relationship between word and voice, St. Augustine clarifies the nature of the priestly ministry.
Verdeutlicht Augustinus das Wesen des priesterlichen Dienstes.
Later, the Archbishop of Cologne, Cardinal Rainer Maria Welki, spoke about the challenges and opportunities for the church in an increasingly secularized society. He underscored that it's not only about structural changes, but also about a deeper spiritual renewal.
Wesentlicher für unser Wirken als Kirche in der Welt ist aber das.
What is more essential for our work as a church in the world, however, is what is only partly in our hands, and what we can describe with the term transforming, or even more precisely, with allowing ourselves to be transformed. We believe and can firmly trust that God Himself is at work in His church, and works in it, also through us.
Und in ihr wirkt, auch durch uns.
Coming up, see how Pope Leo XIV officially took possession of the papal basilicas. With the celebration of his first Mass at the Archbasilica of St. John Lateran, Mater Ecclesia, Mother of all Churches, Pope Leo XIV took possession of the seat of the Bishop of Rome. It's from here that the Pontiff governs not just the Diocese of Rome, but the Universal Church.
Thank you for walking together. Let us all walk together. Always count on me, as a Christian with you, and a bishop for you. Thank you all.
One of the first moments of the pontificate of every pope is visiting the four major papal basilicas in Rome, a tradition that has continued since 1295, during the reign of Boniface VIII.
Technically, the taking possessions is only one, that of St. John Lateran, where the Bishop of Rome goes to take his cathedra. At that moment, there is the fullness of the papal function, and the other presences in the basilicas are simply papal presences of initiation of the pontificate.
St. John Lateran's, St. Peter's in the Vatican, St. Mary Major's, and St. Paul's outside the walls, all of them hold a special status within the church.
Once the Pope, in order to go to take possession of the Lateran, would start from St. Peter's, which was the place of the spiritual abode of the popes, and from there, going through the city, passing by the capital, which was the seat of the Pope's civil power, he would come to St. John Lateran.
Each basilica has its special role in the church. St. Peter's and St. Paul's outside the walls are sepulchral basilicas, where the remains of the two apostles, Peter and Paul, are deposited. was in St. Peter's Basilica in the Vatican that Pope Leo XIV inaugurated his ministry as successor of Peter on May the 18th, with the two elements that mark the beginning of the pontificate, the papal pallium and the fisherman's ring. Two days later, Pope Leo visited St. Paul's outside the walls.
St. Paul, together with St. Peter, is the column of the Christianity. He's the one where Jesus Christ founded his church together with Peter. Peter is the rock, and Paul is the defensor of the world. He's the one who went around the world to spread the truth, which is the gospel. This is why this basilica, where his body is kept and taken care of by us, the monks, is visited by the Pope.
St. Mary Major, on the other hand, is a story apart from the others. It's not the sign of the bishop's papal power, nor of apostolic succession, but it is one of the oldest churches dedicated to Mary, after the Council of Ephesus in 431. The visit to St. Mary Major's Basilica, where Pope Francis used to go, and where he is buried, manifests the Pope's Marian devotion. Leo XIV came here after the solemn mass in St. John Lateran to venerate the most famous icon of the city of Rome, the Salus Populi Romani.
Chiediamo Dio.
We ask God through the intercession of His Blessed Mother to bless all of you, your families, your loved ones, and help us all to walk together in the Church, united as one family of God.
The Pope's presence in the papal basilicas during these first days of his pontificate was not only very important, but also highly symbolic.
The most important symbol of all the basilicas is enshrined in St. John Lateran, and it is precisely from the cathedra of the Bishop of Rome, a cathedra that only he can use and no one else, in the other basilicas with other signs. At St. Peter's, the tomb of Peter, where also the palli that will be entrusted to future archbishops are kept. At St. Paul's, we have the reliquies of Paul's chains. At St. Mary Major, the strong Marian presence and the image of Salus Populi Romani.
The beginning of the pontificate of Pope Leo XIV comes at a unique time in the Church. It's the Jubilee year. Just once in history before, over 300 years ago, we had a similar coincidence when in the holy year of 1700, Pope Innocent XII passed away, and another pope, Clement XI, was elected.
The Jubilee went on anyway, because we draw on the deposit of the Church, the deposit of grace, the merits of Christ and the saints, and Jubilee goes on. We had few proof of it during the time of the Sede Vacante.
The pontificate of Pope Leo XIV is still only days old, and yet there is a sense of clarity and mission about it that began from his walk onto the world stage on May 8th. Among the reasons for the sense of certainty and immediate stability is a deliberate decision he made to dress in the traditional vesture of the popes. This was not a rejection of the deliberate simplicity of Pope Francis, but a conscious effort to connect himself, and with it, his pontificate, to his predecessors, and the long customs and symbols of the papacy and the church.
Journalists, members of the Roman Curia, and diplomats gathered within the Vatican walls in the Campo Santo Teutonico for the presentation of the EWTN book, Leo XIV, Portrait of the First American Pope. This biography offers a portrait of the life, education, and experiences that led the American Robert Francis Prevost to the papacy in Rome.
In understanding him, though, we have to understand where he came from. I mentioned Chicago, Peru, Rome. Yes, he is a U.S. citizen, but he is a universal person.
The author details the influence of growing up in Chicago at a time when America had close-knit Catholic families, thriving parishes, and places of joy in the faith. He also recounts the future pope's subsequent years as a true missionary experience.
He is somebody who, by his call to the priesthood and to the life of the Augustinians, embarked on an absolutely stunning journey. He had no idea he would be going. Something tells me he did not anticipate going to Peru, or that he would spend 20 years there, or that he'd come back to Peru as a bishop, or that he'd be head of the Augustinian order, meaning that he would travel the globe. So as I mentioned, he really is profoundly somebody who understands and has, I think, a finger on the pulse of the world.
Bunsen said that the newly elected pope embodies the mission of the pontificate, to be the center of unity in the church.
The author, Matthew, has highlighted the very important mission of Pope Leo XIV, namely as a bridge builder among cultures and religions.
La pace sia con tutti voi.
It seems to me that the initiative is very ambitious, because it is to write a book about a pope who has just arrived. But in that sense, it also seems to me to be very successful, because it is necessary for someone to give guidance on the steps that Pope Leo XIV is going to take.
Cardinale Prevost.
When the pope was announced, our new pope was announced, many people surprised, right? So I think this is a very good opportunity, and I'm thanking to the writer. So this is the time for the people to know more about the pope. Who is this pope?
As a new pope, it's very important for everybody to get to know him, to know his background, to know where he came from, to know all the path that led him to be the pope today.
This biography is not only a first glimpse into the life of the newly elected pope, but also forms part of the culmination of EWTN's coverage of the interregnum period, in which more than 50 EWTN members reported from Rome.
In illo uno unum, in the one we are one, that, more than anything else, is what Pope Leo XIV believes the world needs to know today.
The biography is available in the EWTN religious catalog and from online stores. We'll be back after a short break to follow the Papal Foundation's pilgrimage through Rome.
We've been very blessed. We've been very fortunate in every aspect of our lives. And, you know, life isn't all about gathering assets and making money and what have you. You have to make this place a better world than what you found it. And we had time to give back.
Kevin and Lisa Clayton, members of the Papal Foundation, came to Rome for the annual pilgrimage. This year was a significant occasion as the church celebrates the Jubilee Year of Hope, but it was also the interregnum period after the death of Pope Francis. Throughout the week of pilgrimage, they passed through the Holy Doors, explored the principal Roman basilicas, participated in liturgies, and visited the tomb of Pope Francis.
The Holy See gets requests from around the globe, as we all know, for assistance, and respectfully, the Pope and cardinals have their day jobs also, and so we're glad to assist as lay folks to determine where we might provide assistance, whether it be for a new roof for an orphanage in Haiti or a sewer system for a hospital in Bangladesh. It gives us great pride and satisfaction to help and allocate those resources to the greatest benefit of mankind.
The Papal Foundation is an organization entirely committed to projects important to the Holy Father. Being a part of the Papal Foundation for Don and Shelley Greiner also means being part of a deeply meaningful community.
There's no one else in the world that has the connections that the Holy Father does.
A network like this, nope.
We're all starting with this common set of beliefs and values. We have a, you know, dedication to the faith and to the Holy Father and to doing good. You know, to that lay our gifts at His feet for Him to do with as He sees fit. So that's a, it's kind of a nice, it's a beautiful community.
So did you also make new friends here?
Oh, absolutely. It's so fun. You're in these special places and you're going hand in hand, you know, going through the holy doors. And the person in front of you is putting a rosary on the door and you're thinking, oh my gosh, why did he do that? And you ask those questions and you think, I should be doing the same thing. So yes, you get to meet some wonderful people.
The members of the Papal Foundation traveled to the Eternal City together with their families. This was Henry and Theodore's first time in Rome.
Going to all these basilicas and churches and seeing all these relics like St. Peter's burial place and then St. Catherine of Siena. It was like really cool and eye-opening, and like it really helped like improve my faith in God, and made me realize that like Catholicism is real, and it's like really, it's all there.
Seeing all the artifacts here in person just strengthens your faith, and lets you know that like it's been going on for longer than what we realize.
Since 1988, the foundation has funded over 2,000 papal projects, personally chosen by John Paul II, Benedict XVI, and Francis, with an allocation of $250 million in grants and scholarships. This year's pilgrimage took place shortly after Pope Francis's funeral, meaning the organization's trip to Rome held extra weight in its significance. The Papal Foundation concluded their pilgrimage at the Cathedral of Rome, the Basilica of St. John Lateran, where Cardinal Timothy Dolan celebrated their final mass of the trip.
We brought some friends with us, and seeing through their eyes, it just makes it so much brighter and so much more special, because I can see that they're so touched and thinking, oh my gosh, we've got had a chance to help them see these basilicas, get to meet Cardinal Dolan.
Think of what has been given to us that we did nothing to deserve or earn, this beautiful faith that we get to be a part of and live in. So just, I think, take back a renewed sense of gratitude